welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are playing Sussex by the Sea in the right place, in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well, it's not been the worst week on Planet Albion. On Saturday, we gained a point against a resolute Ipswich that maintained our unbeaten start to the season and maintained our top six position. And then on Wednesday, Wolves were packed back home in the League Cup. The draw to find out who our next opponents is next Wednesday. This weekend, we welcome Nottingham Forest to the Amex, fresh from their win last weekend at Anfield. Let's hope we can extinguish any Forest fires. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back for the first time this season a certain Mr. Tom Hyland. Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you guys?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I haven't seen you since you were showing off your lovely shoes in Liverpool.
In Liverpool? I think it was actually at Wembley Stadium in the summer, but yeah, they're packed away now. Focus is on the football.
Where are we talking to you from?
Might be from Tenerife, actually, but
what a show off.
He's basically, he's our chief scout in Tenerife. He's trying to find some fresh.
There's
fresh
a canary talents. Gag here, but I can't think of one right now.
I did actually go and watch the Tenerife B side this week as well. You know,
what was the A side?
Well, the A side were playing on the mainland.
Yeah. So how good are Tenerife B?
They are in the fourth tier. So it was an exciting game. They were 2-0 down. They came back to 2-2. I think there was about five times the ball hit the crossbar. So took some of our kind of shooting prowess from seasons gone by.
No, actually, you're just raising a point there. Here, I mean, it's
raising the bar.
Well, no, we're not into crap gags today, so. It's when you're talking about Tenerife B there, and they're in the fourth tier. It's just one of those sort of ongoing or sort of long-held debates, which surfaces now and again about a given football club having a second or third team that actually can, in theory, make its way through divisions. Although, as I understand it, for most teams across Europe where there is a second and third team, they can't overtake their first team, or they can only. There's only a ceiling as to how far they can go. So when you're in Tenerife, I mean, is there a kind of a consideration about the fact that, you know, Tenerife B is just there as their kind of, I don't know, sort of whipping boys, or is there something sort of more more holistic about it?
Well, I think they're probably seen as a separate club within a club. So you kind of get the supporter base from that. There was probably about 1,000, 1,500 people there watching the game. And, you know, they're competitive. Those players are playing for that club. They just so happen to essentially be associated with a larger club. Yeah. So they're almost separate from what I can see.
That's more than a lot of League Two sides get here. Particularly one up the road from here, though. They don't get that very many along these days, do they? But anyway, let's move on. I mean, Tom, it's we're a few games into the season now, and a few games into a new era under Fabian Hertzler. How's it been for you so far?
I don't think you could grumble at it. I think it's been an absolutely brilliant start. I think, you know, if you think, even including pre-season games, we still haven't lost yet under Hertzler. I think the football he's implementing is very good. It's kind of shades of what's gone past, but his own twist on it. I think we're better, definitely down the wings. It's exciting. I do think, though, that, you know, that's what was lacking last season when we only had a Dingra fit for most of the season. So I think he's benefited for sure from kind of a really good squad coming into the season, but the additions that have come in have helped, and I think most of all he just comes across so well. He talks so well, you can't help but get drawn in by what he says and get excited about what's to come for us.
You can't help but notice, I guess, Tom, that, like I say, we haven't had to start again, certainly from I think probably the year zero from where we're at now is Houghton's dismissal and then bringing in Potter and all the, well, the immediate excitement. I mean, as much as we kept missing the goal, there was a clear sea change in the way that we were playing football. It was nothing like as defensive as it used to be. And I think the first game we played, it was a 3-0, either 2-0, 3-0 win at Watford. Yeah, I mean, with Hertzler, is it, you know, him, Potter and De Zerbi kind of certainly tactically cut from the same cloth?
Yeah, there's 100% similarities, but I do think that Hertzler did almost have to have a reset. I think if you looked at the kind of feeling around the club towards the back end of last season, I think we were on a bit of a downer. You know, our form in the league post roughly this time last year was atrocious, and it just seemed like the players and the coaching staff had given up. So I think that he did have to come in and give everyone a bit of a boost, push everyone forward and get everyone behind him. And I think, you know, the way that the atmosphere is, I think is just a lot more positive around the squad now.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's a little harsh to say this time last year. This time last year, we were gearing up for a game against Athens.
Yeah, it was
we were on the up at the time.
No, I'm talking just in terms of Premier League. The point that we went on the downturn in the Premier League. Europe was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Another, you know, it's just hopefully we'll be back there soon. So you think that actually it's not just the tactics, which is one thing. I think it's a kind of interesting thing as to what he can bring. And I'm loath to bring in the whole age thing, but when you've got a bunch of players who are used to work a particular way tactically, that's one thing. And I mean, imagine that Hertzler has brought in his style and the players have said, well, that's fine, we understand that because we did this. And sometimes Hertzler, I wouldn't mind betting saying he's flexible enough to say, yeah, fine, let's implement that. But for a 31-year-old, and I'm sorry to sort of keep harping about the age, even though I kept saying it's irrelevant, to actually have a 31-year-old sort of lifting the likes of Lewis Dunk and James Milner and Danny Welbeck from, you know, what it certainly came across to be a bit of a miserable slump. That takes some doing, doesn't it?
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say that per se in regards to the players, though, because I'm looking at other clubs, for instance, one that perhaps one of our managers might have gone to a little while ago.
Yeah.
But most of our players they have to be very, very tactically flexible, and they're accepting of new managers coming in with new ideas and new tactics, and they will take that all on board and they'll work with it. Whereas that club in West London,
Cowboys.
That's the one.
Yeah,
you know, Graham Potter went there with the same ideas that he had here. And the squad of players that he had there weren't as flexible in what they would do because they weren't prepared to listen.
But I think the point here is not so much about the tactical similarities and the tactical differences. I think it's about the emotional state of affairs of picking everyone off the floor who, I won't say that, I think it's probably going too far to say they were feeling sorry for themselves, but, you know, a lot of the fire in their belly, a lot of that sort of oomph disappeared. I wouldn't say about this time last year, but certainly I think after the 4-0 defeat in Roma, in Rome,
that was the real slump then.
Yeah, Tom.
I think though that, you know, all of this is basically the fruition of Tony Bloom's model and making sure that, you know, the personalities of the people they bring into the club are right in terms of managers, players, that whole kind of holistic view of the staff and players as people comes into its own, because clearly Hertzler's personality matches that of the squad.
Yeah.
And he's able to bring them along. And what better way to get people along with you than winning?
Yeah, and let's not forget, of course, that when we're appointing managers these days, it's largely coming from a position of strength. It's not because the manager's been sacked because we're rubbish. It's because they've moved on, or there's been a natural parting of the ways.
Which is quite bizarre for a club like Brighton Hove Albion, where you like to think we're quite progressive and looking up, and you think, well, okay, well, that's two managers who don't want to be part of this anymore. What's going on?
Well, I'm sure that will come out. But let's talk about being progressive and moving forward and letting go of traditions. There's been a change at the stadium, chaps, in regards to the Sussex anthem, to good old Sussex by the Sea.
Why?
It's
Do you
been
know why?
played. I don't know why. Do you know why,
No.
Tom?
We've had this tinkering before, where what they're doing is they're coming out to right here, right now. I think it's right here, right now. And then Sussex by the Sea is, someone somewhere has had this suggestion. Someone's, and I don't know if it's the you know, what do they call it, the council, the F, or the fans advisory board. I don't know if it's them. Someone somewhere has decided this. I don't recall being consulted. Not like, I mean, a football club by its very nature isn't particularly diplomatic, democratic. But I don't recall this being sort of talked about before being foisted upon us. And there are certain traditions which, as sticklers, as you know, the whole notion of being a fan is that you have traditions, you have these unwritten rules that you must adhere to, that if you do want to change them, then let those stakeholders know, and ask them accordingly. So as to what's happened and why it's happened is a mystery. And in the great scheme of things, you know, there are worse
Does
things
it
that happen at
matter?
sea. However, put it back.
Yeah, well, I did run a quick poll on Twitter earlier,
Right.
just to gauge a opinion about it, and basically, we asked the question, when should it be played? And 62% have said when the teams are coming out, 21% just before kickoff, which is they moved it to, and 17% don't care.
Well, those don't care people can go and sit on the toilet for all I care.
I think it's been absolutely worthwhile moving it just to see the fallout and people lose themselves over it. So I
Oh,
applaud the
yes.
club for whoever made that decision.
Yeah, I think it, unless they have done it, like you say, you know how stroppy the English get when they don't get their ball back. Yeah, it's one of those to say, just to see if you noticed. Yes,
Yeah.
we've noticed.
Well, I'm just trying to think. So, I mean, Newcastle come out to local hero. That's when they're coming out. Palace, when do they play Gladiator? It's not when they're coming out, is it? They do it just before
I
kickoff.
think they do, actually. I think they do. But
Leicester come out to a fox hunt thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Everton
they
come
are the
out to
Foxes.
Zeg.
I mean, that's.
Everton
I
come out to
mean,
Zeg
I suppose
cars.
politically, it's a hot potato, but.
No, it's just, I mean, I couldn't tell you when it start when this particular tradition started of coming out to Sussex by the Sea. Certainly as long as I can ever remember. So it's at least 45 years. But I remember, I think back in the late 80s, early 90s, and in those days, we were talking about a club being run by people who really didn't give a monkeys for their fan base, for the people who pay to come through the door. And they changed it one time, and I couldn't tell you what it was that they changed it to offer. I'm sure that our listener can enlighten us, but there was a couple of times that that's happened. Like I say, in the great scheme of things, you know, I'm in my mid-50s. I mean, I've got other things that I could worry about, but it's good to stick to certain traditions. I mean, at
Yeah.
least we're not coming
It's
out to
change,
Gladall.
Al. It's change. We
It's
don't like
changed.
change.
Yeah,
It's
at least,
change.
well, at least we're not coming out to Gladall all over. So, you know,
Well, that's
small
true.
mercies.
That's true. And look, I mean, I wonder if Norman was consulted actually about. He would have been delighted. But it's something that a lot of clubs come out to like right here, right now. It's something that's
Well,
universal, but.
therein lies another point then, doesn't it? I mean, if the fact that we come out to Sussex by the Sea is ours and ours alone, or rather, certainly within the Premier League, certainly within the Football League, Crawley's too far away from the sea to be Sussex by the Sea. I think certainly Lewis do. But yeah, if we've got to have something that's ours and ours alone, then right here, right now, it's a bit like coming out to Tom Hark. It's a bit like coming out to, I can't think of a sort of others off the top of my head. I know there's at least a couple of clubs that I was saying earlier that come out to Zed Cars, theme from
Yeah,
Zed Cars.
Watford and Everton do that, don't
But
they?
although at least with right here, right now, that is still a connection to our club, and we
Yeah, but
can
because other people
strike
have
claim to
it,
it.
but because other people have it, it's been taken, it's been usurped, it's been dirtied, it's been sullied. Well, been other things.
That's
Not...
to be honest, Al. I mean, you can take pretty much any terrorist chant over the last 30 years, and though you know it's a conversation we've had many, many times before. You've got 80-odd years of popular music culture, and yet everyone just sings that rehashes the old songs
ones,
which are done for former players. You know.
It's a little unimaginative.
It's like, I don't really want Karu Matoma to have the same song as I can't even remember who had it before
the
now.
Original, the first one was Bisuma.
It was, and
we've now got a Dinga running down the wing for me, and think, well, that was Elliot Bennett 12 years ago,
and Will Buckley. it's been moved around. Just a little bit more, you know. I mean, you know, when you got a song like My Sharona, you could easily change that for My Matoma. It'd be great.
But yeah, go on then.
Get the song sheets out, AD.
I'm going to hand them out as people are coming through the station. And but yeah, cool. Anyway, it's changed.
Grump.
Most people don't like it. I mean, I don't know what the reasoning before it was, but yeah, we'll see what happens with it. Well, let's move on to last Saturday. Ipswich Town were our visitors. Ed Sheeran was in the Amex, which pleased many people and displeased many others. Answers on a postcard, please. But it was the first time since we played Ipswich in the top flight since 1983. First Premier League start for Yassin Ayari and Georgino Ruta. Ayari is a player, and when we were doing our pre-season predictions. We normally like who's going to be the breakout player. I don't think anybody would have thought it would have been Ayari.
Well, I wouldn't say he's a breakout player. So
he's one that surprised me the most.
He's doing as well as we'd wanted him to. The bits and pieces that we saw before he went on loan said that there was something there. Like with all the players, and I include the senior players that come to us, you can see it takes them a few games to settle in. And even those that have been out through injury, it takes them a couple of games to get back into shape again. But I think that the more game time that Ayari will get, the better he'll get. And here's hoping he stays injury free, because that is quite a blight that we have. Breakout, not quite, but he's certainly coming on leaps and bounds. And but if I can't see him being a starter on account of the fact that I think that there's not that there's anything wrong with him. He's an excellent backup plan, but I think there's just too much traffic ahead of him at the moment for him to get.
It's going to be even more.
Yeah, exactly. To get an automatic starting berth, and but for Crawley Town doing what they're doing, then. But when he's come on, he hasn't. He hasn't been disappointed, and given the quality of central midfielders that we've had over the last 3 or 4 years, it's always going to be a struggle to keep up with that. But even if we can get someone who's 75% as good as that, then as what's gone before, then we're always in with a fighting chance, and that fella's stock is rising.
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, I really love watching Ayari over the last few games. Just I think he's got that directness about him. He picks up the ball, and his first thought is, what's ahead of me, and just has that real drive and engine to get through the middle. I think it's really exciting. I think really good as well to see him get his first Swedish cap in the last international break. That'll do him a world of good. And I think, to your point, Al, like the depth now, it's not just Ayari that's got to fight for his place. Everyone does. I mean, you look at it and go, Enciso probably isn't a guaranteed starter now. And that's a player that for the last 18 months has kind of been tipped as one of our top players. Yet he's now got a fight on his hands to get into the team.
Good.
Well, that's something which I'm going to enjoy, though, because I mean we're going to talk about the Wolves game in a bit, but I mean he did start in that game, and he was blowing very, very hot and cold. He was getting very, very frustrated, but I mean if for him to have that fight on his hands to get into the team, and I'm hoping he's up for that fight, because that can only be good for us, because it will mean he's hungry and he'll become a better player.
Well, this is where we get to see their real character, isn't it? I mean, how do players... Because given over the last year, 18 months, anyone who doesn't have a dislocated spine is in contention for a starting lineup. And so now that we've got a fight for it. So in CISO, if it was even sort of like 80% fit, he was going to be playing. Because once he gets going, he's anybody's. Is anybody, he can start any time. But now, like you say, he's got that fight. Is he going to sulk, or is he going to fight for his place? And when we say fight, are we talking literally fight? So that's where we get to see the character. I mean, it's not a question we can answer right, excuse my phrase, right here, right now. but as time goes on, and those places are, it's about time, frankly, we had a lot of competition for space, for places. And I think this is about as competitive as it's been for a long, long time.
Yeah. But I mean, I see, Tom, that with Onciso, he has got a little bit of the red mist about him. There's a little bit of petulance. And I certainly saw that last night where, I mean, I think if there was VAR last night, he may have had a very different end to the evening.
What did you feel you saw then,
Tom?
There was a bit of handbags between him and I think it was the Wolves 20 or something. But yeah, there was a bit of a coming together at a throw-in, a couple of questionable tackles.
That was Tommy Doyle.
Thomas Doyle, yeah. So there was a bit of going. The referee had to separate them at one point because Enciso kept yapping towards him. But you know, I like to see that in a player.
So long as you know it's
Adam El Abd-esque, wind up the opposition.
So long as you can see that it's actually part of an act rather than how he really is, and he's frustrating, and he actually wants to go and kick the advert hoarding or, you know, knock a ball boy into the middle of next week. I hope it is just all sort of theatre and drama.
Yeah, and I think part of it was you can see him smiling around it as well. So I think it's a good thing. I think, you need players with a bit more bite. For too long, we've always been just so friendly and almost like, yeah, there you go. Go past me.
The ghost of Morpay.
After you.
The ghost of Morpay lives on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the one of the big talking points from the game against Ipswich was, I suppose, the redemption for Muric after his game for Burnley against us last season, where he gifted us a goal. But he more than made up for this in this game, didn't he, Tom?
But that was at Turf Moor, not at the Amex, where
this
goalkeepers come and play a blinder. You know, how many goalkeepers have we just seen have a terrible season, yet they turn up at our place and then just
The Burnley goalkeeper at the Amex last year had a blinder, didn't they?
Yeah.
Trafford.
James Trafford, yeah.
So it's staggering how many goalkeepers have such good games against us at home.
Tom, it's not really, is it? Given our shooting, it's not that staggering, is it?
that's fair. Well, this season's going to be different.
Okay.
This time next year, Rodney, it's going to be.
No, I mean, but, okay, be well,
I mean, he made. He, I mean, Muric made some a couple of outstanding saves. There's one double save which he made, which was what from Jorginho and then Mitoma, which was fabulous. But one of the stops he made was very early doors, which is from Carlos Baleba. He's been trying to get on the score sheet for all season, and we'll talk about his goal last night in a bit, but I just want to talk about him generally because,
sorry AD, before we do that, I think that because we're glossing over that double save, and I think that we ought to, even if it's just in passing, mention it. I think what an amazing double, you know, well, I mean, double saves are always sort of like good anyway, but the way he got, I mean, it was very Stockdale-esque in as much as he made the save, it fell to someone else or fell to someone, he managed to get up and knock it away again. I was going to say it's probably the best save I've seen at the Amex since, let me think, Stockdale's double save against Forestieri. And I think that actually is worthy of mentioning again because it was that good.
Yeah, I think it was incredible save, and I mean you can absolutely say he's the reason we didn't get 3 points. But I do also think that we probably didn't turn our dominance in the game into enough clear chances.
Yep, yeah, I agree.
And
I mean,
that's kind of a bigger talking point to my view, because you can't hang on these one instances in a game.
in a
We
90
should
minutes.
have
Well,
been
I
done
mean,
beforehand.
I've got that written down here. I've got the note here. It says, some beautiful football from us, but guilty of overplaying at times.
Yeah, and let's face it, Ipswich. I wouldn't say they came. Is it too far to say they came for a point? I mean, they had. I suppose they had their one breakaway moment. There was a certain amount of outhouse, really, but it's not as though, Verbruggen was particularly busy, and we had a lot of possession. I certainly know I didn't see the whole match, but certainly the whole match stats. But I certainly saw the first half stats where the possession was something like 73-27, and that doesn't surprise me for a second. So my point being is. It is about just sticking those chances away. The Ipswich defended very well. There was those last minute shots where there was the last minute sort of throwing yourself in front of the ball. That's what they came for. They came and did their job. And away point at Brighton is probably one of the ones that they want to go for and got. So if they'd have got three, then great, a nice little Brucey. But they came to do the job that they came to do. I think if they'd have tried to.
I don't necessarily agree, Tom. What are you saying?
I mean, I just think that you've also got to consider that, we were missing Pedro, for example. I think that was a massive loss for us. Does he convert some of the chances we created? Possibly. But, I think he's had a great start to the season and was definitely a loss. You've had other players obviously playing a fair bit of football quite a long way away from home. Over the international break and quite a quick turnaround. So you can't expect us to be at 100%. And there always seems to be a lag after international weekends. And I think if you look at the results across the league on Saturday,
Well, we
there
did better than
was.
Liverpool, let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, going back to Ipswich again, I mean, I was very impressed with them, really, because I thought that. Look, I mean, we've seen teams come here, particularly newly promoted teams. We've seen them come and play with everyone behind the ball, be ultra defensive, like the old gamesmanship comes in. But I think they were a little bit more expansive than that. They did actually try and get out. They weren't actually trying to play with everyone behind the ball. They knew that we were going to have the lion's share of possession, and that's pretty much the way they've been playing so far, because they know that the only way they're going to get some success possibly is by hitting this on the counter. And in fact, they did have that chance where they hit the post, which is was it that was the one straight after the Kadioglu's air kick, wasn't it?
I can't
Which
remember.
is
I can't
brilliant
remember.
introduction to English football, Birdie. Brilliant. But yeah,
I
I mean,
mean,
it was Rory Delap, wasn't it? He
Liam
ran
Delap.
an entire pitch,
Yeah, Liam, not
and no
Rory.
one managed to stop him. That I mean,
I
it was
mean,
really
Rory Delap's
impressive.
not
But
running anywhere now,
no,
but
exactly. Yeah.
yeah, but
No,
I
I mean,
mean,
it probably sounds churlish. I mean, there was a certain level of outhousery, which I thought the referee was pretty lenient on, but even then, our players are big enough to just to get on with it. I mean, it's not that many people who can knock Lewis Dunk over
yeah.
by with a nice little forearm smash. But like I say, that's kind of churlish, because it's not as though we're above that sort of thing ourselves. It was just one of those. I mean, it's also a learning curve for Hertzler as well. Okay,
Yeah.
right, we have this much possession. Why didn't we score? So there's plenty for him to work on. Graham Potter clearly had this problem. De Zerbi had it in fits and starts, although he was a bit more kamikaze. But like I say, it's a new thing for Hertzler, and hey, we're still unbeaten. I mean, we to use the old cliche, let's look at those positives. And the main positive is actually getting back to a point you were going to try and make 5 minutes ago, AD, which is in the form of.
Carlos Baleba.
Isn't he good?
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I mean, I'm not sure he was meant to be the first name on the team sheet at this season. I think that the plan was for O'Reilly and Vifa to be the central two with Milner and Baleba coming in and as first change, but he's just making himself undroppable.
Oh, I mean, absolutely superb start to the season. I think consistent starts is doing him wonders, which is something he didn't get last year. And yeah, I mean, it's super exciting, because it's that shades of Caicedo before he moved to Chelsea.
an important distinction.
And I think, you know, he's got that pace, he's got that power, the ball just sticks to his feet. I mean, he goes into these areas with two or three players around him, knowing I'm going to get out of this,
Yeah.
and just creates the space that puts us on the front foot in their half. I mean, there's very few players in the league that can do that
Yeah.
to such consistent levels.
I was chatting to someone the other day, and they were trying to work out whether he was more like Caicedo or more like Bissouma. I think it's a combination of the two.
Well, there's a bit of a fag pay between those two anyway. I mean, clearly Caicedo was Bissouma's, understudy. And like I say, Baleba's clearly the next one off the parking lot, as you would put it. And the similarities are frightening. Perhaps we've always needed that kind of central midfielder who I mean, there's a couple of things about last season. One, he was still very much a work in progress. There was a fair few dropsies within him. Sort of, I suppose it's probably one of those things that when the team's playing poorly, he looks appalling. Point in case second half against Wolves. But when he's playing well, and certainly with the Ipswich game, he was dragging. Even in the first half against Crawley, he was the only one doing anything. I thought we were so lackluster in that first half against Crawley. But Labour was absolutely running the show. It was like, well, I've got the ball, come and get it off me. And that's an invite, not just to the Crawley players, but to the Brighton players as well, because he was that good. Yeah, there is something exciting about him. I think that probably the second half against Wolves shows that fallibility, and that kind of checks our excitement about him. But there is something about him that has it within him to actually exceed what, or if not match, then certainly exceed what Caicedo has been doing.
But this goes back to what we were saying a minute ago about Julio, Tom, where the amount of competition that he's got to get himself not just on the pitch but even in the squad, everyone's having to, like I said, he's having to up his game as well.
Yeah, and I think to slightly counter your point out, I think he is also impeded by the fact he plays in a central midfield position, and that core position that when as a team we're not playing well, that is probably the most visible place that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think he does suffer from that slightly. But I think it's great that there's the competition, as said, you know, these players have got to make sure they're performing in training, make sure they're performing on the day. And I mean, being the best player on the park in three or four games already this season isn't doing him any harm.
That said, I'd still rather we retain Billy Gilmour. That's such a shame, that is. But because I mean, then you think, why, blimey, in that squad. Because actually, if we're talking about the central midfield berth, I mean, the match against Wolves was the first time I'd seen Weaver play live. One, he's more mahoosive than I thought he was going to be. He's a big old unit, isn't he? But two, he looks neat and tidy. But as we saw in the Everton game at the beginning of the season, he has a whoopsie within him as well. And hopefully, as time goes by, that's going to be coming out of it. And as I said to you in the on the on the ride home last night, Heidi, there's a potential midfield pairing here of an African and a redhead fella for this season. Now, where have we heard that before?
No idea, absolutely no idea.
Yeah, and
But
we got about 100. They ended up leaving. We got 160 million for the pair, but
well,
I'd rather they stuck around and we gone to Europe, actually.
I would say that Ecuador isn't in Africa, but
Yeah, but Bissouma.
yeah, who didn't play alongside McAllister?
He did,
Did
yeah.
he?
That's what he
Yeah,
did,
all
yeah.
right. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I've slept since then. Anyway, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, which you can find, well, you can find everywhere. This show is brought to you in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited. Where can you find Flowers Unlimited, Al?
Well, even though we're now into, as they call it, the shoulder season, flowers still bloom. And yes, head on over to Portland Road in Hove for all your floral necessities.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, if you're getting married, if you wish to You know, pay your condolences, or if you just wish to give someone hay fever, go to Flowers Unlimited, Portland Road, Hove, flowersbrighton.co.uk. Dave Costa, owner of the shop, absolutely lovely chap, and he has kindly donated the fact that anyone who's an Albion fan or an Albion season ticket holder automatically, well, I say automatically, you have to tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder. automatically gets a 20% discount, which is not so bad. So yes, thanks very much indeed to Dave and the team from Flowers Unlimited. I will probably hang on this forever and a day, but as many people know, a couple of months ago I got married, and Flowers Unlimited, who knew? I didn't change my name. I'm not going to be called Alison.
It was a good opportunity, Al. You could have done.
I could have done. I still could. You know, the night is young. They did a fabulous job. And so get married just to please our sponsor. Please do.
Cool.
I'm looking at you, Packham.
Yeah. All right, whatever. Okay, so not a competition we often talk about on this show, Al, but I was delighted to see the news this week about the Sussex Senior Cup. They've had their second round draw. Any idea who we've drawn, Al?
Yes, I do. It's Old Vardenians, which means we're going back to Withdean.
We're going back to Elsgar. That was my next question. Where the Old Vardenians play? Our 21s or 18s or whoever playing in that competition that week are going to be in action at Withdean. And this delights me more than it probably should, Tom.
Ah, it's a special place, isn't it? The Theatre of Trees getting its limelight again. Perfect.
And of course, I think Old Vardenians' biggest attendance in their history since New Vardenians. Probably.
Can I just also point out that those who are playing in the under-21s were probably still just babbies when we left with Dean?
Probably most of them weren't even born, actually. But
I'd hope they were, because we left there, 13 years ago?
Exactly.
But they certainly weren't alive when we first started playing at Withdean.
No, that's true. It's true. It's amazing that it is only 13 years ago, but it does seem like a lot longer these days.
Well, the thing is, it's not going to be the mythical place for them that it was for us. You know, and I think that obviously the seats alongside the home straight on the running track are still there. I think I could be wrong, but I think that the away seats are still there. But obviously, the south stand seats, the ones opposite I don't know why I'm explaining this. I think there's probably people who didn't go and didn't, you know, I'm thinking of actually people like our, and this is how much we've changed so much that we've got people who listen to us, you know, in Japan and in Australia and America, who have no concept of necessarily, I mean, they know of Withdean, they know, you know, a sort of a part of the history, but you know, as Tom just said, there was something a bit magical, there's a bit sort of amazing about it. And here I am thinking, well, I went back there not that long ago to do a photo shoot and it's horrible.
Well, I think, you know, the Worthing End seats are still there, aren't they?
I think they are there, yeah. So
this might be a good opportunity to get in that stand for once and tick off all of the stands from Withdean.
It depends whether they've taken the hammer down or not, is the question.
Well, they do for the football anyway, so yeah. Yeah, it'll be an interesting one, because actually, let's face it, when it comes to the under-21s, it's either that or they occasionally play at the Amex, but it's usually at Lancing, so yeah. It'd be interesting. I don't know. Do we know when the game is?
No, they haven't announced it yet. I mean, I think in the Senior Cup, there's an unwritten law that that we have to play away. Even if we draw at home, we play at their ground anyway, which is a great thing.
They've got to sort out their ticketing policy then, haven't they? Because you know, there's. I mean, how many is that north? I would say north stand. I mean, when you think north stand at Goldstone, north stand at the Amex, and then north stand at Withdean, how many does that bike shed hold?
I don't know. I mean, it goes back to a lot of the conversations we're having with Vic Bragg last week, a show which is, of course, available on our website and anywhere where you get your podcasts. Okay, and there is another cup competition. We're not going to dwell too much on it, guys, but it's a bit weird, and that's the National League Cup.
Yeah. They basically looked at the EFL trophy and gone cut and paste, haven't they?
A little bit of that, yeah. Well, what it is that 16 teams, and I don't know if it's the first 16 that volunteered, it's 16 teams from the National League Conference to you and me, or the Alliance Premier for those of a given vintage, against 16 teams in Premier League 2. Now, the difference is when it comes to the EFL Cup or whatever they want to call it, the only sort of that's the teams from the Championship, League 1 and League 2, or Divisions 2, 3 and 4 in real money. Plus some under-21s from Premier League sides. But with Premier League 2, there are clubs where they have their under-21s, but their senior side aren't necessarily Premier League sides. So there's the likes of Blackburn and Sunderland already are in that. So Premier League 2 is slightly different. And it's the game, it's the usually the league games that you get to see on YouTube on a Friday night when the under-21s are playing at Lancing. And, you know, for if you really want a sense of scale and justice, I remember not 3 years ago, less than that, probably, 3-4 years ago, maybe, Moises Caicedo turning out for the under-21s at Lancing against, you know, whoever it might be. Yeah, that's quite a leap, isn't it?
Even a few weeks ago when we played Crawley in the AFL Trophy, we had one of our new signings that we paid £7 million for turn up and play there. And you're going, well, that
one... Oh, Yalcorry, yeah.
Yeah, he's worth more than the club.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> It's not difficult, well,
than the entire
it?
Town, yeah, yeah. No, everything's in context, isn't it? So... You just turn up on a Friday night at Lancing. I mean, this is one of the things I do intend to do, and I still haven't yet. And it's easy to do. You just the tickets are free, but to go and watch the under-21s. In fact, the next game that the under-21s are playing at home is it's Saturday the 5th of October, and that's the weekend we're playing Spurs at home the next day. But we're playing on the Saturday against Palace. Albion under-21s against Palace under-21s. So that could be quite spiky. And I think, you know, given that to season ticket holders, it's free to get in. Mm. I think it might be a hoot just to sort of like, you know, wander along there. I've been to Lancing. I've been to the training ground, but not to watch any games. I've been in the press room and I've been into the offices, but I've not been to see a game. So, yeah, it's about time I did. And I think it'd be quite interesting. I mean, like I say, it's good to watch the future of the Albion or the potential future of the Albion at a given moment. And for that, I think back to the Forest Green Rovers game. What was that, 3 years ago? And, you know, beginning of the season, we're thinking playing a bunch of kids here in the side. By the end of the season, 7 of that 11 are playing against Manchester City at the end of the season and turning them over or at least getting a draw out of it. So you do get to actually, it's almost like it's a sort of anti-time traveling as much as you're getting to see the future of the club.
And you get
to
see the future of the club at Woking and Wealdstone, so even better.
What's at Woking and Wealdstone?
The under-21s in this new competition.
Oh deep joy. Well, I suppose it's not too far away, at least, is it?
I don't get it. I don't understand. I think.
Well, there's £1 million to the winners, so and a team in the National League. That's quite a leg up.
Well, true, but I mean, basically, I mean, they've got enough competitions already. They've got the FA Cup, they've got the FA Vase, they've got the FA Trophy.
The teams in the conference don't play the trophy and the Vase.
They are in the Vase, though, aren't they?
Yeah, but the point is, it's not as though, although there's 32 teams in it, it's not as though they all play each other. I think they only play about 4-6 games, something like that, and a bit like the sort of like the nonsense with the Champions League before they then go into the knockouts.
Okay. Well, speaking of cup competitions, of course, we were in action in the League Cup last night with Wolves coming to the Amex. 9 changes to the team that drew against Ipswich. There was the first involvement under Hertzler for Jakub Moda, Tom.
Yeah, nice to see him on the pitch and healthy after what feels like so long. You could see that he hadn't played for quite a long time, I think. But you know, he did a job. Think there was points, especially the goal at the end of the first half that we conceded, just not tracking back. I don't know whether that was him getting a bit leggy, whether it being his first competitive game. But yeah, always nice to see him back. But I'm not sure where he fits in with the squad where it is now.
Wherever it is,
it's no
out
secret,
wide.
Al. It's no secret that there was he was meant to be part of a swap deal with Dewsbury Hall, but which would never materialise.
Well, if it didn't materialize, then you make use of the assets that you got, in which case that particular game was probably a good chance for Hertzler to see what it was. He's never been an out-wide player for me. We're back to sort of like, where does everyone fit in, and who do you put in? I mean, if we're going to have everyone in place in a position that you know is their ultimate, their superior position, then I wouldn't have stuck Mudder where we did. But like you say, traffic ahead of him, so something else has to give. Yes, he did look like it. Remind me, he came back and he did play a few minutes, last season, but he didn't go on loan or anything once he recovered, did
No,
he?
no, no. I think there was talk of it of actually happening once he did get himself back fit again. But he's just never quite. I don't know
Quite.
whether he's not been fully fit or he's just never quite been in the manager's plans or whatever. But I mean, we know there's a player there. We've seen it, and we've probably seen it more for Poland as well, where he's one of their key players at times. So, I wish all the best for him. I just got, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he went either on loan or was sold in January. But I think, he's clearly talented. He's played brilliantly for us in the past. He's just been really unfortunate that injury took him out for nearly 2 years, and we've kind of had to move on without him.
Well,
Yeah,
this is it. I mean,
absolutely.
if he hadn't been injured, given that individually and collectively how much we've improved in those last 2, 3, 4 years, unless, like I say, put that red letter day, that marker as being Houghton's exit and Potter's entry, and playing in that kind of progressive style that we do, then each player or each person that we've got in has to be as good as, or if not better than what's gone before. Now, if he'd have played a couple of years ago, and not been injured, he'd have probably been in a position to have played and improved and got better. But like you say, he ends up marking time just by not playing, and marking time at the Albion is regressing.
Well, let's not forget that it was a sliding doors moment as well, because he got injured in that game against Norwich. The next game for us was that game away at Arsenal, where Caicedo came into the starting lineup
Well,
and
yeah.
never looked back.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
So you were saying that Chelsea might have bought Moda instead of Caicedo.
They still might.
And they still might. Well, watch this space. Yeah,
They
so.
still might. But obviously there was a first start of the season for Evan Ferguson last night as well. Now, obviously, again, Evan, it was another player that suffered with injuries and illness last season. And he looks like he's back to himself again, Tom.
Yeah, he was strong. He looked like he was more like the player that we saw at the start of last season. I think there's still a little bit more for him to do to get back to that level. But it's encouraging to see that. Encouraging to see him on the pitch playing. I don't think we necessarily played to his strengths yesterday. Didn't really give him an awful lot to go off. But he's still got that kind of desire to want to shoot. There was that one shot that he turned and just curled wide. But yeah, it's
Oh, that was the
exciting.
one against Ipswich, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Well, the
There
point
was, I
is
mean,
that he.
he very nearly scored last night, but Minter put it in and was
Oh,
offside. But I
was
think it
that
might have
going
been shot.
in?
I think it might have been going wide. I think it might have hit the post.
Right.
All the Man United fans laughing in glee.
Well, exactly. I mean, that the thing about Evan Ferguson, and I can say this for probably most of the players, is that for the first 40 or 44 minutes, I thought Brighton were really good, really snappy. They were clearly a yard ahead of Wolves, who were getting a bit petulant at times. We were winning the ball back very well, and Ferguson was clearly a part of that. He was rolling his man. There was an awful lot of holding and cuddling by the Wolves defence. But Ferguson, just because it's almost like he's picked on and he ends up having to have a fight virtually every single game. But for those first 45 minutes or 44 minutes, I thought he was really good. I thought the team was really good. Obviously, Belieber, absolutely superb. Then we get that moment of slackness, which I think that I think you missed out on by having to leave the presser early, Adia, was that the word that Herzl used was lazy. Now, we said complacent, or we said arrogant, but, you know, lazy. I mean, sort of, you know, let's go and find some more alphabetic spaghetti. It wasn't clever. And then the second half, it all just went to... It went to custard. You know, we couldn't find a pass if we could help it.
Yeah.
Go on.
I'm prepared to give Gary O'Neill the credit for that, though, because he changed it and he put someone on belabor. He cut off all the passing lanes. And, like, all of a sudden, we were giving the ball away cheaply and they were able to counter really quickly and put us on the back foot.
There's two elements to that. I think, one, it stemmed from them scoring just before half time. And I think that gave them the fire just kind of, they were like, we can get back into this. And we just didn't react to that. Second point about them blocking off the passing lanes. We weren't even passing in the passing lanes. No. We were just passing straight to them.
Yeah.
That's because they were snapped. They were quicker into the tackle. They were closing everything down and we weren't able to make the pass.
The point about that is that while I fundamentally agree, and as much as if we wanted to make a progressive pass, it was very rarely on, or we had to be a lot more careful. But when you're talking about the closing down, one thing that the Albion team has done over the last 2 years, and it hasn't really stopped under Herzl, is that they know how to play the ball through the, certainly around the back, under pressure, and they know their way out of a particular jam. Now, you're right about sticking someone on belabor. But the point is, and this is coming back to exactly what Thomas just said, it wasn't playing those passes. I mean, you know what pass, and some of them are high risk. For some of those players last night, that risk was too high because the quality, they know how to do it. They know what's required. They know each one where they're supposed to be. Because it's not as though they're going to completely abandon what they learned under De Zerbi. But then if the quality isn't there, then you're stuck before you start.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So, yes. And then there was one point, I think probably halfway through the second half, where everyone is sort of biting their fists and going, come on, what are you doing? Where we then put together this lovely 12-pass move, which I think finished in, unfortunately, with a bit of a tame shot, but the build-up to it, you think, well, this is what they're trying to do, and this is what you can see what they're doing. So they do know how to get through the Wolves' lines. And yet, for the way of reason, they didn't.
It was just the execution in the second half.
Yeah.
It was lazy, you know. They weren't putting enough on the passes. It was too easy to read. They weren't doing what they should have been doing.
Ooh, yeah.
I think I turned to my mate at one point and just said, we do know we're playing in blue and white tonight, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it just got kind of farcical.
The pass that Steele offloaded, the ridiculous pass that's the careless, really careless pass that he offloaded. He had done that earlier in the game. I'm not about to go down the whole Verbruggen v Steele route. And for those who can't stand Jason Steele because X, Y, Z, he also made some excellent saves in the game.
I mean, he largely had a great game last night. I mean, he was actually making lots of very, very important interventions. And that save from Guedes, who was a thorn in our side all night, by the way, was sensational.
But what I felt was that, you know, like I say, for all the grumpiness that we've got here, and you know, it's kind of astonishing that, thankfully, as poor as we were at times, thankfully Wolves were worse. You know, their finishing was you know, risible.
It's also the game that you want to have that kind of thing. When you are in the lead, you know, we played well in the first half, very well in the first half. You know, we kind of, that let us ride through that second half to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Benefited by the kind of lackluster performance of Wolves on the whole.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, we were talking about Carlos Belabor earlier, but he's now opened his account in the goal scoring column. What a way to get off the mark.
Well, nicking the ball out of the bloke's back pocket, running about 10 yards the wrong way, and then knocking it in with basically a howitzer of a daisy cutter.
I called it a purler. What's your description, Tom?
I'm not allowed to say it on here, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, a thunder something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the point. I mean, I was at the opposite end of the stadium, but right behind the line of of the shot for you know, considering the half of the pitch, I could say, yes, Mr. Barber, there are seats that have limited access view. But yeah, I didn't realize he was as far out as he was. But even then, the second, you know, the moment it left his boot, you saw it was going in. It was that well placed. Yeah, I mean, it had to be fairly hard in order just to get, you know, there that fast. And I'm just wondering about, well, I say I'm just wondering about it. I don't really care about how slow the keeper was to get down. Or was it really what the case was the shot really that good?
Well, it's fair to say, Tom, that one wasn't under hit.
No, I think that one very much was a very, very good goal, and that's all on paper. I think you can call the keeper into question a bit more with a Dingers goal, because
okay, well, let's talk about that. It was almost a mirror image, like from the other side of the pitch. And I mean, I really, really liked a Dinger last night, and that was his third goal of the season already, which is great. And I think he's. I don't know what we're going to see from him this year, really, because it's another one that falls into that question of who's going to be in the team this week. Because, I mean, obviously, with the injuries we suffered last year and him having to play every minute of every game, he probably got himself burnt out.
He didn't look it last night.
No, he didn't, because he's fresh, but. He's mostly been coming off the bench this season, and he, you know, I guess it's going to be one of those seasons where we are going to have starters and finishers.
Exactly, and I also think that he's kind of had that weight lifted off of his shoulders of not being the only winger in the side that he had for most of last season, and I think that made it very easy for teams to defend against him, because he was our only outlet out wide, and he's got that freedom and swagger back that we saw at the start of last season, except just a level up, I think. And I think he's an exciting player, and deserves changing to number 11 mid-season.
Oh, that's still, another thing to still, upset that, the English, isn't it?
I mean, when he came on at the weekend, I'm like, That completely had passed me by. I'm like, what?
No, I knew there was
no idea.
I knew there was a brouhaha about it, and then the club did say, look, if you've already bought an Adingra shirt that's got the wrong, you know, the old number on it, we'll change it for you. But you know, some people just, oops, change. We can't stand it. Stop everything.
No, he's a winger. He should be a number 11 in my head. So that's
no, absolutely, absolutely. No, I mean, there's plenty of players, certainly in the first half. Against Wolves, who've made a claim to be wanting to start, a few probably less so. But the point is that it's a game against, you know, not rubbish. You know, as much as we made 9 changes, Wolves made 10. It wasn't a you know, sort of a howitzer of a game. I thought that certainly for a lot of the game we were comfortable. I think clearly with a superior side, we just have to prove it each time.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about individuals, I still think that it's actually way too early to cast the whole thing. We can talk about
the season.
Yeah. Well, not even that, but you know, there's so and so's made a good start. So and so scored some goals. So and so's doing this. I reserve judgment on the Albion Raw until
May.
Probably October for your Crawley Allen the boxer. because I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But
yes, let's do that. Yeah. I don't even want to. I'm not going to go there. And that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Alan Wes. Thank you to Tom Hylands. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar in association with Flowers Unlimited on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye.
I weigh the water. I feel it all. I ask myself a million questions in the dark. I lay in silence, but silence talks. It tells me heaven is no closer than it was. My heart keeps pulling in the wrong direction. I'm about to cross that line. Looking for the wrong. Everything that I've been mixing, oh.